Welcome to The Continued Silence with me, Emma Jane Taylor, on UK Health Radio. The Continued Silence is focused on the very uncomfortable conversation of child sexual abuse and the importance of talking openly about this subject. We want to try and normalise this conversation. It affects millions of people, young and old, across the world. The work we do is very much engaging more lateral thought processes on this terrible crime, supporting survivors, protecting children, and helping those not wanting to listen, to listen. Joining me each show is my resident panel, therapist Jenny Corby, activist Chris Tuck, and usually Michael Boughton, my resident poet, but he seems to have been missing for a very long time, so we hope he comes back very soon. Each week, we are also joined by guests from around the world to share more insights on this crippling conversation and to help us share important messages. This month, we are thrilled to be joined by Natalia. She's from Illuma Health, and she is with us from Singapore. Fancy that. So anyway, without further ado, let's get on with the show. So I'm going to come to you first, Natalia. Sorry, Denny, usually you, but first, Natalia, tonight. Just to say thank you for joining us. I know it's late with you in Singapore, but I really appreciate you staying up from us tonight, Natalia.
Thank you so much for welcoming me as part of today's show. I'm really grateful to be here.
Amazing. Well, look, every week I turn to Denny, first of all, and today's show is about recovering from trauma. And of course, this is going to be a huge show, as I'm sure we will could all expect from it. So, Denny, great to see you there. Thank you for joining us again today. I have two questions. My first question, recovering from trauma, what does that mean? And also, what does it look like?
Wow, two great questions there, Emma Jane, again. Well, recovering from trauma, well, it's uniquely different. There's no right or wrong way to move through or to move on from trauma. And I think language will be resonated with very differently for many, many different people. So you might hear the term recovery, fully recovered, healing, I feel grounded, I've got management of trauma. Trauma no longer defines me. So it's important to hear and respect, I believe, individuals and see it from their frame of reference. There's no assumptions to be made here. And again, the time frame will be different. Clients often talk of hearing about other people being recovered. They see others verbalizing that recovery is possible. And whilst I wholeheartedly believe that it is, and I do believe trauma doesn't need to define you, there are many steps and moments of discomfort, fear, the unknown, isolation, loss, judgment, both externally and internally, and shame that a survivor will go through. It takes huge courage to do this work. And it's important, I think, to acknowledge that timeframes, modalities, individual therapists, small steps forward, relapses, learning experiences, they're all fluid and they're all unique to the individual. And so my message today would be find your fit, do what feels right for you, listen to your gut, it tells you the truth.
Nice. Find your fit. And I think that's a really important message. And, you know, from a personal point, when I first sort of started on my healing, I didn't realize anyone else was out there going through this. And of course, then you sort of, you know, get to an age where you realize you're just one in a million people going through a lot of trauma. And actually understanding that fit is the unique thing. You might not be unique by what you've experienced, but your journey to healing is unique because everybody is so different. And, you know, I get people messaging me all the time. What did you do? How did you do it? Have you done this? Have you done that? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I've done all of those things. Some worked, some didn't. But don't, you know, I'm happy to share some of the things I did. But you've got, like you just said, Denny, it's about finding your fit. And I think that's something possibly that I think is a really important message is from today, Denny. Recovering from trauma isn't the same as it is for the next person and the person after that.
Yeah, absolutely. And even within someone's own individual journey, that might take a different pathway at certain points. So I know that the pathway that I took and many clients who sit in front of me, the therapy is different. I started off needing person-centered, purely person-centered. I needed that to tell my story. I just needed to feel safe and someone actively listen and hold me. And then through no fault of the therapist or the modality, I moved then through into a bit more of a TA, because it was like, well, what do I do about it now? What do I need to change? And that will look different for different people. And I think, as a therapist, and Natalia, I'm sure you've got a view on this too, it's really important in that first session with a client. I need them to know, I want them to know, I want that space to be about, this is about collaborative work, this is about you, this is about me holding space to open up doors that you may not have thought about opening, maybe terrified to open. However, if the fit doesn't feel good, that's fine. It's absolutely fine. And there's other modalities and other therapists. So I hear too many people say, oh, therapy didn't work for me. And when you actually scratch at the surface of that, it's that they've maybe had a therapist that, hey, not everyone's going to fit with us and we're not everyone's cup of tea. And I think it's a shame that I don't think the message is out there enough that it's okay to move on. It's okay to be open and honest and move on. And any therapist worth their money will be absolutely okay with that discussion.
And again, a really important a message there, Denny, and something that when I first started my therapy, I was 23, went and called the therapist way out of town just in case I bumped into her. Not that matters, but actually when you're 23, you're fearful that you're going to see someone who might say something to you. And it was talking therapy. And I thought, oh, it'll just be 12 weeks. So I'll be over this. And of course, what you just said there was very apparent for me after 12 weeks. And now, obviously, looking back 30 odd years later, the dynamic of those different therapies is certainly what helped me, but it might not be the same for the next person. I got quite scared actually during the end of my training at therapy with her, because on week 12 on my way there, and I just built up this friendship with her, or well, maybe friendship's not the right word, trust. On the way there, I had a blowout on my car. And so I rang her just to say, oh, I'm really sorry, I can't get there today. She said, okay, well, look, I'm going to have to charge you. Now, look, I mean, again, this is probably another conversation, but professionally, she had every right to say that. But I was saying, can we just reschedule for tomorrow when the tire's done? And she's like, no, I have a tight schedule, and that was it. But then that put me off going to ever see her again. And up until sort of week 11, I was like, really like, yeah, you're loving this. I feel much better from it. So actually, it was really interesting, Denny, that, you know, at the end of week 11, she actually put me back in my box a little bit, because I thought I opened up to this trust. I couldn't help that my tire had blown out. I was actually on my way to her. And then she charged me, and then I never saw her again. But I did start another therapy, but she put me off talking therapist. Not because she wasn't very good, but because that was what she was at that point, until later on in my life when I thought, actually, I do need sort of part of that to be my training again.
Yeah, and I think part of that, hearing that, Emma Jane, is as a therapist, it's around, yes, there's, you know, the whole point of therapy is safety and contracting and boundaries. And that's really important. But that doesn't mean they have to be rigid. You know, you read your client, you build up the rapport and the relationship that you've got. And there are decisions that can be made that are about there in the moment, in that present time. Can't comment, I wasn't that therapist. I don't think I would have made the same decision, but we're all very different. And I think what's interesting in that piece of communication, little Emma Jane, there was a wound opened. Little Emma Jane no longer felt safe. So little Emma Jane goes back into, you know, it is really important that clients feel that they can bring to the therapeutic space. And it takes courage, and it's not always easy to do it straight away. But I always say, if there is anything I say that even if 3 days later you think, well, I'm not happy with that, I'm really not happy with that, bring it to the space, bring it to the session, bring the elephant into the room. That's what true therapy is. I'm no expert. You're the expert on yourself, and I'm here just to allow a navigation to happen, a reinterpretation of the narrative you've told yourself from childhood to now. And if there's anything that happens that, you know, you really feel that trigger, don't you? That little child screams. And actually, from those moments come very great learning points, but only if we talk about them and only if we acknowledge them. So yeah, Emma Jane, that's a great example of how just a piece of communication can send a survivor of trauma scurrying back into their kind of known protective framework.
Yeah, and I think it was I think it's really interesting sort of now sort of thinking back to myself then, as you know, obviously now I'd be a bit different about sort of my approach to that conversation, but I just didn't know what to say, right? I mean, like you say, I was little Emma Jane, and I was just like, you know, I'd built up a bit of trust, I felt a bit confident, and like I say, she had every right to do that, but all I wanted to do was reschedule it for the next day. And so, you know, I felt it's interesting, and she was a great therapist, right? I really liked her. And so it was just an interesting, when you're dealing with survivors of child sexual abuse, and maybe, you know, that this is part of it, there's a great deal of consideration to be given to survivors, all on their different journeys, but all coming from, they've been, you know, we've been, there's been a control, there's been a manipulation, there's been coercive behavior, there's been the grooming, and then, you know, those are the things that maybe should, and I would say most therapists I know who work in this space would have great consideration for, but if something doesn't go right, it might not be the survivor's fault because of it, and that's where those considerations could be greater. And not I'm not maybe not talking just about therapy here, but just in life, those greater conversations are the ones we should be, I need to be expanding, because those are the ones that can really help heal. And it's the empathetic approach that can help survivors move through traumatic experiences and recovery.
Yeah, I hear you. And I'm on board with that. I'm also just very mindful that therapists are not perfect human beings.
No, and that's why I say she was great at what she was doing. So that's why I was really surprised afterwards, and maybe later on in life, because I was thinking, but maybe those are things that we all start learning. Maybe she might actually have learned, maybe she'll regret that, I don't know.
Absolutely, and I think there's something in, had it have been, and I'm going to express my personal opinion, for me, I knew that I needed in-depth long-term therapy. Had you have had another session that you could have revisited and that discussion could have happened, there would have been a modelling of resolution. You'd have been able to say how you felt. But sometimes those 6-week, 12-week therapy blocks, I'm not saying that they're not useful and they could work for many people, and I know that they do, but that's a good example of almost having to end a block of therapy before layers have been peeled away, before any modelling of reparenting or conflict resolution, you know, has taken place. So it's an interesting, that's another interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, it's out there, the debate's out there. How long do you need therapy for? Well, how long's a piece of string?
And I think, again, it's the recovering from trauma, find your fit is really important there, isn't it? Because when I started that session, I thought, yeah, 12 weeks, I'll be bright as rain and, you know, on with my life. 25 years, 30 years later, I realised that wasn't to be the case. And it wasn't that I was in therapy every week for all those years. It was going in and out. In fact, one therapist, because I'd been so trained, every time I sort of decided to work with a therapist that it would be weekly. This one therapist I worked with, he was psychodynamic therapist, psychiatrist. And I went for my first session. And as I left, I got my diary out. He went, no diaries. I said, oh, what do you mean? He said, you just come back when you're ready to come back. And so I did this session, and actually it was a really powerful session. And then about 3 weeks later, I thought, actually, I feel like I need to go and see this guy again. And then I went back in and I had quite a heavy session because he did hypnotherapy as well. And then at the end, he said, you know, where I am. And, you know, if you want to come and see me tomorrow, I'm here. If you want to come back next week, I'm here. If you want to come back every day for the rest of your life, I'm here. But I went away that day and I didn't go again for another 3 months. And then the next time was a year later. So I was much further forward in my therapy by the time I saw him. I was about sort of 15 years into sort of very various different therapies. So it was really interesting when I saw him that I felt much more stable. Maybe if I'd seen him when I was 23, I might not have had that confidence to go back. So it was a really interesting, like, all of this conversation is so huge and so many people work in so many different ways, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, at the end of the day, it should come to no surprise to anyone, really, although it does, is that, you know, we're all different, aren't we? We're all different. You know, we can all experience, I mean, I know Chris has spoken about this before. You can be in the same family, be in the same environment, experience the same sense of abuse and turmoil that's going on, but your individual experiential experience will be very different, and how that then manifests in your symptoms of trauma. So thankfully, I thank everyone that everyone's different, even therapists, because I think it would be a sad day if we were prescribing a one fit for all. I just think it, you know, yes, it would be a bad day.
And that's such a good thing to sort of take on. Okay, Chris, let me bring you into this conversation. Obviously, that was such a big opener this week, but obviously talking about recovering from trauma, no one size fits all. And like Denny says, find your fit. And obviously, you know, having gone through my own personal experiences with that, as have you and everybody in this room, this journey is so unique. Because we are all at different stages and phases with how we're looking at what's happened in our lives, how we need to get through, what we need. So, you know, recovering from trauma, what does it look like for you?
For me, I didn't even know I was on a journey, to be honest. I had packed my whole life up in my head and I didn't want to show anybody externally to me what I had gone through, how it impacted me. I didn't even know about the impact at the time until after I had my child, and then it hit me for six. And then once I started looking at my mental health impact and alongside my physical health impact, I started thinking something's not quite right here. Wonder what this is all about. And then I started being triggered all the time. I started having sleep issues, and trauma was well and truly turning up in my life. I was driving my car accidentally into brick walls because I was disassociating. I wasn't thinking, wasn't focusing. And that's when I started going, something else is going on here. And that's when I started looking into adverse childhood experiences, trauma impact, health conditions, how they were all linked together. And that's when I started my journey of healing, and I'm still on it. Most of the time I'm fine, and then I will have episodes of when I have real impact, and then I have to just take more self-care and therapy as and when I need it. I've probably been in and out of therapy for the last 5 years, 3 years solidly, week on week, because I've obviously, my job has involved a lot of trauma. So to keep myself sane and on an even keel, that was needed. And some of it was my own individual therapy, but some of it was like supervision as well, where I could just speak about whatever I needed to speak about, whether it was work related or personal. And the last year I've had intensive EMDR. I'll let Denny say what that stands for because my brain is just gone. But I've had EMDR, where I've had really deep-rooted therapy to help me access the deep-rooted anger that's been bubbling away under the surface that I wasn't allowed to express. And now that anger was showing up everywhere in my life. And to be able to deal with it once and for all and get to the root cause of it has been life-changing for me.
Wow. And do you know what, Chris, you said something at the beginning there that sort of really resonated. Of course, you know, when you're being, when you've gone through childhood trauma, childhood sexual abuse, we don't actually know as a child that it's wrong. Most of us, because we are groomed, coerced, manipulated into thinking it's okay, and it's with people like 90% of the people being abused are being abused by people they know, so we think it's okay. It's when you sort of get into your 20s, when the brain is starting to fully develop, that you realize that there's something wrong, but you don't really know what you need to get help with because you don't really know what it is you're facing. And so, you know, when you were saying you didn't even know really what you would, that you needed the help. And of course, this is a really big conversation and a huge part of this. Anyone who's gone through, and I mean, this is all in my opinion, right? Anyone who's gone through childhood sexual abuse, I do believe does need some form of help to help them through, because whether it was for one day, 1 month, 1 year, 10 years, you know, it's still a traumatic event. And most people I come across do understand that, but there's some people who are like, yeah, I don't want to go back there, it just opens up. But I genuinely feel that catches up with people later on in life somehow. And so, you know, thank you for being so honest, as you always are, with this conversation. And that, you know, that you are still able to understand there are times where you need to still have support. And also, you know, obviously your work is in the well-being field, but you do a lot of advocacy and activism in the child sexual abuse space. And so, you know, occasionally I'm sure there are frustrations and rubs with that. So, you know, the fact that you can actually be so honest will help so many people as well. So thank you, Chris. Oh, wow, Natalia. Welcome to today's show, Natalia. Recovering from trauma. I knew it was going to be big, 20 minutes in. And you know, here we are setting the scene on a very big, complex conversation that probably needs about four shows worth to cover properly. But what are your sort of initial thoughts before we take a break and come back to you? What are your initial thoughts, Natalia?
Listening to everybody speaking for the last 20 minutes, there are two really important things that I think should be integrated. And the first is that when it comes to seeking support and healing, it's all about attunement above all, and feeling safe, seen, heard, and welcomed with our story. And I think when we've gone through childhood abuse, the lack of attunement is actually a trauma in itself. It's not only about the abuse that's happened, it's about that we've not been seen and held through those times. And so one of the things that really commonly happens for trauma survivors when they do seek support is that they experience re-traumatization. And that can happen from simply re-experiencing that feeling of not being seen or heard or welcomed or validated. And so I think to begin talking about how we heal, it's to A, create experiences of attunement, and B, become very aware of the conditions and dynamics that need to be created to prevent or at least minimize and recognize re-traumatization for survivors.
Thank you, Natalia. I hope that everyone, sorry if my connection is dipping in and out here a bit. But I am hearing everything. We're going to take a short break now. Don't go anywhere. We will be back after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to today's show, where we are talking about recovering from trauma with my panel, Chris Tuck, activist, Denny Corby, therapist, and our guest today, Natalia Richards, all the way from Singapore, who works at Illuma Health. So trauma, recovering from trauma. This is a huge show. We already, before the break, we already have assessed that. And you know, the really most important thing, I think, from today is, you know, is there any sort of tips that you feel that you could share, Natalia, that, you know, someone who maybe hasn't gone into therapy or is at the beginning of their therapy might like to hear about this conversation?
I think in order to begin healing from trauma, we really need to understand what it is and how it decontextualizes. And once we can spot it, we can start to create a really compassionate response to it and also start to be creating these very beautiful boundaries around it so that we can really heal. And so I always like to begin by sharing my definition of trauma, which is that trauma is when a past experience of threat that is over is living and breathing in us now, and it can affect us mentally, emotionally, physically, and also relationally. So the relational is a really big piece that we often don't talk about. Trauma is largely unconscious. It's somatic, it's nonverbal, it's felt, and it travels through the story of the body, emotions, and then it trickles through relationships, communities, cultures, and systems. So it continues. It doesn't just end. And once we understand that trauma shows up in this way, we can begin to listen to its language. And one of the things that I really encourage all survivors to learn to do is to begin by understanding their experience of safety or threat. So really commonly when we have gone through trauma and it's lying unresolved inside us, we will have either a constant sense of threat or alarm, or we may be recurrently triggered into it. And sometimes actually nothing bad's happening in the present, it's over, but our body is saying something's wrong, I'm not safe. And so when we can learn to tune into that felt sense of danger or threat, we can begin to ask, is this needed right now? Is this relevant here in the present moment? And just that moment of inquiry can allow the threat responses to turn down and make a little bit of space to continue with whatever we might need for ourselves, or we might be with our family or at work and needing to engage. And just that continued inquiry of safety or threat is an excellent point of departure.
Wow, thank you very much for explaining that for me. And I think, you know, what you were saying, nothing bad happening in the present. That's a really interesting comment there, because I know just from personal experiences and from people I speak to, have been speaking to, this is a really important part of a trauma recovery. And because you're still, when you're talking about it, it still feels very real. And of course, things can happen that can trigger you back to that situation. And feeling safe, I mean, you talk about attunement, feeling safe in your body, feeling at one and feeling in harmony. It's, you know, keeping that around you to remind you that you are safe now. That's a hard thing, Natalia.
It's a really hard thing, especially if we don't have a map for it inside ourselves. So many of us, when we're beginning to recover from trauma, there's zero access to safety. And so we usually need to create it with an external resource. And that external resource could be another human, but it could also be with a weighted blanket, or to be in a beautiful warm bath, or to be curled up in our bed or cuddling a cat. So the somatic component is really important. So when we are having a trigger and when we are experiencing that sense of threat, we're having a physiological experience first, that's then sending messages to create thoughts and stories and emotions and feelings. And so when we call in a somatic and relational form of support, we can learn to begin to shift our state really quickly, so that anytime we notice, oh, I'm feeling unsafe, we can A, check if the safety is relevant in the present, and B, we can reach for an external relational somatic resource to help us to begin to regulate. And I think it's a really important tool for all survivors to learn to be able to do that for themselves.
Gosh, Chris, I'm going to bring you into this because it's all relatable. We're all nodding our heads and agreeing with you there, Natalia. I recognize there's lots of things that I know that I've done to turn this conversation around, to make it my positive, my own it. So it's not a trigger. It's a nice thing. Pets have been a huge part of that as well for me. But being safe in the present is such a big part of this. You know, Chris, just hearing Natalia speak there and nodding away, what are your thoughts?
I just wanted to go back to the feeling of all of this, what you feel and how to deal with that. So for me personally, it was about trying to decipher the feeling. What is it? Is it sadness? Is it anger? What is the tangible feeling? Then acknowledging it and then dealing with it in my way. So when I had the therapy, often people think that you have to revisit the details of the trauma, and that's just not true all of the time, most of the time. So when I had my therapy, it was about, right, what feeling is showing up for you? And then trying to understand where that feeling was come from, what was the cause of that feeling, and then me verbalizing the cause and then dealing with it in my way. And I think the empowerment model, through everything that I do and everything that I do for myself, is really, really important to get back that power and that control for me. And I try and express that to other people as well, because that's so important in recovery, I believe, in my opinion, is to have the power and the control back to empower myself so that I feel that my self-esteem and my self-worth is where it should be. So that's just important for me.
Yeah, and I think important actually in this conversation, self-worth, Denny, again, something that I think that takes many survivors a long time to actually get to before you realize that's an important part of this journey. And of course, people talk about self-worth a lot. I think there's often a rub, isn't there? Because, people are talking about the importance of self-worth, but they might be further along in their journey. And so, going back to this non-judgment, empathetic response to this conversation is really important. You know, go back to the beginning of this conversation, being told that I was going to be charged for my therapy 12 weeks in at 20 or 22, 23 years old wasn't something that I could handle. But as a 50-year-old woman, I could be much more diplomatic about that conversation. And so those years and gaps between us all, and that's why this non-judgmental empathetic approach is really quite important, on especially when it comes to self-worth, because self-worth was the last thing on my mind 22, but it's high up on my, it's the most important thing on my whiteboard now, Jenny.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was listening to Chris and Natalia there and I was nodding away like a nodding dog, because a lot of the work that I do is exactly what Natalia and Chris said. It's around being really aware of the first thing to be severed when we're a child being sexually abused is our sensory development, hence why the smell, taste, touch can completely send us back into our history and what was happening. We might not know that at the time, and that's the work. But in order to understand that, you've got to be able to identify where in your body are these feelings being felt. What do they look like? What color are they? What shape are they, if you gave them a shape? To really get in contact with your body, because as Natalia said, that's the first danger zone. That body feels something. The story gets told into the neurological pathways that have been set from the abuse. Then there's the unconscious response and the behavior or the thought that keeps us safe. And the other thing I wanted to touch on, and I do feel really strongly about this, is that we have to make sure we don't move too quickly through that process. If you are trying to, and I'm sure many therapists can look back at their notes sometimes and hold their heads in their hands, but if we remove or we go too quickly or we expect explicit details of the abuse to be shared, we actually do more harm than good. And so I'm always really mindful professionally, but from a personal point of view, I was not ready to hear the words that I have been sexually abused as a child. It wasn't violent, it wasn't aggressive, it was from an amazing in many ways caregiver who provided, supported my GB career in athletics. I didn't resonate with it. It felt like I was being an imposter. I wasn't worthy of the title. So I think we have to be really careful about the pace that we go when we're working with clients. I'm also 100% with Natalia on it doesn't matter how experienced a therapist is, what modality, if you cannot build a relationship where there is safety, connection, and that real sense of the client being seen and heard rather than your interpretation, then I don't believe that therapy will be successful. So there's a whole array of that. And then when we go back to self-worth, how on earth can we have self-worth when everything that happened to us would have mapped the pathway that we're bad, that we're wrong? And so it's stepping stones, isn't it? Self-worth comes from scrambling and revisiting our core beliefs about ourselves. And when that work is then completed, we can start to view ourselves through a different lens. And the last thing I want to say is that many clients come back to me sometimes really disappointed. I thought I'd got this in the bag. I thought I had sorted this. And I think what we know is that sometimes when you then get into an intimate relationship, there's many aspects of sex and physical touch that we think we've sorted, whatever sorted means. I'm very clear when I say, for me, for many clients and myself, I may always have that initial physiological response to a sound or a smell. What I want to learn is how do I recognize it straight away? How do I ground myself? How do I calm it? And how do I not respond to it in a scripted way? So, it's not a short process, is it?
It's really not. And I don't know, I've got notes coming out my ears here. I just want to go back to something that Denny said, Natalia, Chris as well. I was not ready to hear I was sexually abused as a child. And actually, again, every time we do these shows, there's always something that kind of really hits me quite hard. And I think that today will be something that hits me quite hard, because we hear this a lot in this world, in the work that we do, that children have been sexually abused or adults were sexually abused as a child. But being ready to actually say that, who knew? And actually I'm thinking gosh, I think there was a long amount of years from starting therapy to when I actually, you know, was able to say, yeah, I was a child who was sexually abused, and understand it and own it without that fear and that embarrassment and that concern about, you know, my own life and my own personal surroundings. So, Natalia, you know, Chris, that conversation in this sort of recovering from trauma, I think that's quite a big one, I feel. And it would be sort of really good to explore that, really, Natalia.
I think it is so existentially confronting and terrifying to admit and sense and know that somebody harmed you in that way, and particularly somebody who you believed to be a safe person. So the world does not make sense. This is the most heinous thing that can happen to someone. And so I think the inability to own it until a certain point is about not having the capacity to psychologically process it, particularly if the person who's harmed us is a caregiver or someone close and that we love to. Those love and harm aren't meant to go together, but in the case of abuse like this, they do. So I think, number one, we need to begin to build the capacity to see and to process the reality, which is very, very painful. And I think that that takes time. And often it takes a lot of processing first, so that we can reestablish storylines and assign roles.
Okay, yeah, Chris, you know, that conversation, love, harm, you know, and actually child sexual abuse, those two words are attached to it, Chris.
Yeah, for me, that concept that Denny just described, I feel it in one issue, but in another sense, I don't. When my dad was convicted of paedophilia, it broke me because there was that love there and he didn't harm me. He harmed others, which obviously is not good, but I could feel that in that sense. But when other abuse happened to me, other sexual abuse happened to me, I spoke about it at an early age, when I was 9, when I was 16, but I wasn't believed. So, you know, I shouted it from the rooftops, literally, and I got into more trouble for it. And that silenced me. So I've experienced it from two different perspectives. And yeah, it's very interesting. Very interesting. I haven't got really a lot to say about that other than what I experienced from two different perspectives. And it's made me think.
Yeah, Chris, you know, as you were just saying that, again, doesn't that just highlight the absolute differences that everybody will experience? The same terminology, but there's a whole array of different experiences within that. And as you know, we've had someone on the show and I've had clients, and if I'm really honest, putting myself out there, I probably say that I fitted into this, that I had been led to believe yet again, the white van, the stranger, aggression, rape, a penis, whereas if it was a female, it wasn't fitting that criteria of what I had led to be believe was sexual abuse. And also that real confusion where, as a child, parts of it you move towards. There's many, many clients who the shame burns brightly because there was some sense of enjoyment, arousal, moving towards, because that's what the belief of attachment and love became. So it's not straightforward. Everyone's going to have a very different stance on it, a very different experience. And that's exactly what this show is about, that there is no right or wrong. Whatever you are thinking out there, whatever you are tussling with, whatever you're saying to yourself, it's okay. And there is support out there. Not everyone goes through this in exactly the same way.
Thank you, Denny. Well, look, we're going to take a second short break now, so please don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to today's show, The Continued Silence. We are at the end of the show. We don't have long left today. If you just joined in, you're very late, but you can catch up with us again on UK Health Radio, where all of our shows are. If you look under the CSA Silence, you'll find everything on the shows that we've done here on UK Health Radio. Okay, so Natalia, I'm going to come back to you. Denny was said something there. Whatever is right for you is right for you. Essentially, and that's really important. And I see too many conversations in my world where people are trying to tell people to do it this way or to have this do it the same way as me, and you know, X, you know, ABC. And it's not because they're not trying to help. By the way, I do believe everybody's trying to help, but I think we've really got to understand that this is a very wide conversation. There's very lateral threads attached to it. No one size fits all. You've got to find your fit, everything that you've been saying. And it's about listening, about creating what's right and understanding that whatever it is right for you. It might not be right. And, you know, a few times we've said this, and that I think that's something that I think will really come out of today's show, Natalia.
Absolutely. Healing is so non-linear, complex, textured, and completely unique to the individual. We all have our own arc of healing, our own non-linear arc, and it's important that we stop comparing it to others. And something that I always like to offer those that I work with is when every single part of our process becomes welcome, we may still have trauma to heal, but we're no longer traumatized. We just enter healing as a way of life. And I think when we approach it in that way, it becomes far more graceful.
Thank you, Natalia. Now, Natalia, your website is illumahealth.org, and that's illumahealth.org. And I'm sure people can go and find everything they need to know about you there, including your social media. And now one of the things you say was your word, which is very much been used today, is healing. The word for today for you is healing. And again, a word that we really resonate with. Is this something that you sort of put at the head of all the work that you do?
All of my work is about helping us to better understand the nature of trauma and develop pathways for healing individually and collectively. And there are so many ways that we can do that together.
Lovely. So you talk about, when you talk about child sexual abuse, you talk about the story that has been buried for so long, that trauma really is quite hard to recognize sometimes. And I think, you know, if we look at that, you sort of just expand on that before we sort of go off air today. It's understanding what that means. Like Chris, obviously, she was a young girl and realized that this was wrong, and she tried to speak up about it. It's not often that, you know, survivors are that young when they really recognize it and speak up. But obviously, there are lots of survivors out there who do. But it's like, you know, understanding the depths of that came later for Chris, right? Because she really sort of has that sort of process as she sort of grew up and realized that she probably did need some support. Because as a child, you realize something's wrong, but it's understanding. And if no one's listening, that sort of depths of that trauma get deeper and deeper and deeper. And, you know, young people speaking up aren't being heard. Older survivors, like, you know, in their 20s, 30s, aren't understanding how they can take it forward. And it's just, you know, surrounding this dark, dark, dark conversation is such a complex conversation that people, survivors, get confused about it. We go around in circles all the time talking about it. We need people on the outside to come in and start talking about it with us. And, you know, I think a few people do in my world. We need much more than this, because how can everybody understand and recognize it? So, you know, just sort of before we go off air today, just a couple of minutes from you, Natalia. You know, hard to recognize from a survivor, but how, you know, understanding what people can do on the outside of that conversation.
As a survivor, often we will have suppressed the memories of the sexual abuse, or we may have remembered them but kind of put them aside. So we kind of hide them under the rug. And usually what begins to happen is that we have altered perceptions and experiences and relationships. And so these will perhaps come in the form of triggers. So something that might be an indicator if we're getting triggered in relationships and finding them very difficult or very overwhelming. Another way it might show up is in our body. So we might start getting physical symptoms. And that's very common for survivors of childhood sexual abuse, is to have all kinds of physical symptoms. They might range from autoimmune issues to thyroid issues to gut issues to mobility issues and even eating disorders and stuff around food and weight. So these are all indicators that something might be at play. And then mentally, there can often be a felt sense of fear and anxiety, as well as fragmentation. So voices in our head, and many of us survivors have voices in our head that are shaming us or berating us or second guessing, conflicting. And we don't talk about this because we feel a deep sense of shame. So there are so many things that we can start to spot for ourselves and think, well, why is this happening? Let me start to look to the roots. And in terms of relating with survivors, I think the most important thing that we can do is to be relationally mindful, to learn how to attune. And when we notice that somebody might be reacting to our presence, to be able to take a step back and actually bring it into the room and inquire and say, oh, I notice you feel uncomfortable. Can you let me know what's going on? Or could you let me know what might let you feel a little bit safer? And again, offering that attunement and inviting people towards experiences of agency and choice and expression is always a relational intervention. So when we are a survivor of any form of abuse, our agency and choice have been taken away from us. So no matter what role we're playing in someone's life, if we know that they're a survivor, to continue to offer and empower relational experiences of agency and choice is incredibly healing.
Thank you, Natalia. It's been such a pleasure to hear you talk today and for you to share so many great insights with us. Now we're going to go over to Denny now, who is going to round off today's show with her summary. I'll be back with you after this.
Yeah, so what a show. Today has been huge, hasn't it? There's been some wonderful, wonderful therapeutic talk, and cutting it down, really, I think what Natalia, Chris, EJ, you've been speaking about is it's about the relationship and connection. It's about being believed, being seen and being heard. And in order to then work with a client once that is felt within your space, it's about identifying physiological reactions in the body, really leaning in. What am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? And actually, what emotion do I tell myself I'm feeling? Because actually, excitement and anxiety are very, very similar. It's about separating all of those differences. And then what story or narrative are we telling ourselves? And then from there, that's where the work can be done around self-compassion. Without compassion, we're always going to be going around that cycle. You know, we have to also remember that clients, no matter how traumatic they feel their life is, they will come with their own set of skills and resources and ability to learn how to implement them. So there's also that side. It's to bring about the side of what have you done in your past that actually will serve a purpose now in a positive way. I think comparison, I think Natalia touched on it. Oh, goodness me, comparison, the route to disappointment, rejection and repeated cycles. The minute we compare ourselves to others, we're already taking a step back. So that's really important. And I think the last thing that I want to say is that I really do want to get the message out there that healing can hurt. Healing can be painful. Healing can bring about grief of our childhood, grief of attachment to someone that we really loved, even a physical loss of that person as we walk away from that trauma. So I just want that to be the last message, which might seem negative, but actually I see it as positive because many people panic. Many people panic as they're going through this process. It's not all wonderful. It's not all, oh, I'm feeling much better. The more we know, the more we understand our loss. So I think that's really important. And I think it's been a fabulous show.
I truly, truly believe everything that you said there about it being a fabulous show, because it really has. And, you know, what you were saying there, both of you, Natalia and Denny, in your summary, how powerful all of that is, really. And I hope that if you're listening today and you're feeling stuck with any of your recovery from trauma, that you take all of that away and remember that you are not alone. There are so many people out there, but it's your journey, and just take all that you can from this. And if you need to, there's people around. You've got Chris on, you've got Chris in on Twitter. You can find her at @ChrisTuck_WWHF. You've got Denny at Denny Counseling. And of course, if you'd like to go and check out our guest today, Natalia from Alumia Health, she is alumahealth.org. And of course, you can find me, EJ Taylor UK, on Twitter. Thank you again to everybody who is working hard behind the scenes, from Johan, UK Health Radio, the panel with me today, our guests, Christine, and everyone else working behind the scenes to make this show happen. You are all very appreciated, and we're very grateful to you for helping us get this message across. We'll see you back here next time. Until then, thank you, Natalia. Thank you, Denny. Thank you, Chris. See you soon.